You walk into a coffee shop you've literally never been to before. You're just looking for a caffeine fix. But the moment you step through the door, it hits you.
That really sudden, overwhelming wave.
Exactly. A dizzying wave of absolute certainty. Like, I have been here before. You know the exact layout of the tables, the angle of the light hitting the counter, even the way the barista is standing.
Right, and for decades, science has essentially told you that this feeling is just a glitch in your brain.
Yeah, like a cognitive typo. Two neurons bumping into each other in the dark, you know? But what if it's not a glitch at all? What if that eerie sensation is actually your brain showing off its absolute most advanced, sophisticated feature?
Which is such a fascinating premise.
It really is. And that is the mission of today's deep dive.
Yeah.
We're looking at this amazing paper by an author named Don Semsey. And, well, before we even touch the science, the origin of this paper completely shatters how we usually think about major breakthroughs.
It really does. It's quite a story.
Right. Because Semsey has no formal scientific training. He doesn't have a PhD. The guy holds a GED. Yet, using this purely first principles approach, he has built an incredibly compelling theory about one of the most universal, mysterious human experiences out there, deja vu.
It is a truly remarkable piece of work. The text we're examining is called Deja Vu as Predictive Memory: Dreams, Intrusive Thoughts, and Pre-Experience Simulation.
Quite a mouthful, but yeah.
It is. But it manages to unify several completely different mental phenomena under one architectural umbrella. Our goal today is to look at the brain not as a passive machine that sometimes malfunctions, but as a relentless anticipatory engine.
Okay, let's unpack this because my whole life I've accepted that kind of glitch in the matrix explanation.
Those people have, yeah.
The text outlines these traditional views, calling them things like temporal misalignment or a dual processing error. The basic idea I was always taught is that my brain tries to write a memory and read a memory at the exact same moment, gets its wires crossed, and accidentally stamps a brand new experience as an old one.
Right, the classic crosswires theory.
Yeah. So why is this new paper arguing that the old theory is just fundamentally wrong?
Because the old theories completely fail to account for what déjà vu actually feels like to you in the moment. In psychology, there's this concept called phenomenological clarity.
Phenomenological clarity. That sounds intense. What does that actually mean?
It just refers to the vividness, the sharpness of a first-person experience. Think about what an actual memory error feels like.
Like when a word's on the tip of my tongue.
Exactly. Or you walk into a room and completely forget why you went in there.
Oh, I do that all the time. It feels incredibly fuzzy, like vague and frustrating.
Right. But déjà vu doesn't feel fuzzy at all. It is incredibly sharp. It has a sudden onset and a striking high-fidelity clarity. A simple processing delay or a crossed wire wouldn't produce a sensation that feels more lucid than reality itself.
Okay, that makes total sense. When I have a brain fart, I feel confused. But when I have deja vu, I feel profoundly certain.
Yes, certainty is the key word there.
So, if we throw out the crossed wires theory, what replaces it? The text mentions this massive paradigm shift regarding how we view perception, moving away from passive perception toward a concept called predictive processing.
Which is a huge leap in how we understand the brain.
But I have to admit, the phrase perception is inference sounds like, I don't know, something a detective does at a crime scene. How does that apply to me just looking at a coffee cup?
Well, it requires flipping your intuitive understanding of your own senses completely upside down. The everyday view is that perception is passive reception.
Like my eyes are just cameras.
Exactly. You open your eyes, light hits your retinas, the data travels to your visual cortex, and your brain simply receives the image of the coffee cup. You're just a passive audience member watching the movie of the world.
But the predictive model says that's wrong.
It argues that passive reception is way too slow and honestly too dangerous for survival. Instead, your brain actively constructs your experience.
It actively constructs it.
It continuously generates predictions about what sensory data it is about to receive, milliseconds before it actually receives it. It's pushing a model of the world outward.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's only using the incoming sensory data from your eyes and ears to correct any errors in its prediction.
Wait. So my brain isn't just a camera recording the room. It's more like an obsessive movie director constantly storyboarding the very next scene and then just checking if the actors hit their marks.
I love that analogy. That captures the dynamic perfectly. The brain is an obsessive director, and this is where we have to completely redefine the feeling of familiarity.
Right, because under the old model, familiarity just meant remembering something from the past.
Exactly. If something felt familiar, it meant your brain successfully matched the current moment to a file in your memory cabinet. But in SEMSI's predictive model, familiarity isn't about the past at all. Familiarity is just a confidence signal.
A confidence signal. Okay, what does that actually mean in practice?
It means it's a localized biochemical reward.
Yeah.
It's your brain's way of internally communicating, hey, the sensory input we are receiving right now perfectly matches the storyboard we just built.
Like a pat on the back.
Pretty much.
Huh.
It's the system confirming that its anticipatory model is highly accurate.
It's the brain giving itself a high five for predicting the future correctly. That is fascinating. But, I mean, it brings up a huge logistical problem.
Which is?
If familiarity is just a confidence signal that reality matches a storyboard, well, when is the brain actually drawing all these storyboards? Because I certainly don't feel like I'm consciously predicting the architectural layout of a new restaurant before I walk through the door.
You don't feel it consciously, no, but your brain is doing it constantly through a process the paper calls pre-experience simulations.
Pre-experience simulations. Okay.
Your predictive engine doesn't just storyboard in the immediate millisecond. It needs to build up a massive, diverse repertoire of anticipatory models to pull from later.
So it's stockpiling blueprints.
Exactly. And to do that, it runs simulations during specific mental states. SEMSI identifies three main engines for this. Let's look at the first two, dream state activity and resting state micro-idle cognition.
Okay, so the paper talks about different states having different levels of bandwidth. It calls dreams a high bandwidth generative environment. I know what bandwidth means for my home Wi-Fi, but what does it mean for a dreaming brain?
Think of bandwidth here as the amount of computational freedom and energy the brain has to explore possibilities.
Because when I'm asleep, I'm not doing anything else.
Right. Your sensory inputs are largely shut off. You aren't processing the outside world, so your brain has an enormous amount of processing power available. It uses this high bandwidth state to run broad, sweeping simulations.
What kind of simulations?
It generates large-scale predictive templates, complex spatial structures, intricate social interactions, elaborate narrative arcs. It's exploring an incredibly wide range of possible future configurations.
Here is where I stumble, though. If I think about my actual dreams, they are completely unhinged. Just chaotic nonsense.
They usually are, yes.
So, how does a high bandwidth dream about, say, a talking dog driving a submarine help my brain predict the extremely boring real-world layout of the local DMV?
It sounds completely absurd until you look at how the brain actually extracts data from those simulations. The predictive engine does not care about the talking dog.
It doesn't.
No, it doesn't care about the narrative of the submarine either. It only cares about the underlying geometry and social configurations.
Oh, so it strips the weird story away completely?
Yes. The loose, chaotic structure of dreams is actually a feature, not a bug. It gives the brain the freedom to generate massive amounts of structural variation.
Like throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks?
Exactly. It's throwing a million different architectural and situational blueprints at the wall. In that bizarre dream, your brain might have generated a highly specific geometric layout for the submarine's hallway, and it mapped out a specific rhythm of a conversation with a talking dog.
And then I wake up.
You wake up, and the narrative is discarded. But the spatial template of that hallway and the temporal sequence of that social interaction, those are saved in the predictive repertoire.
Wow.
The sheer volume of these templates increases the statistical probability that one of them might just happen to align with the waking moment later on.
Ah, so it keeps the floor plan of the submarine, which just happens to perfectly match the hallway leading to the restrooms at the coffee shop. That covers the high bandwidth dreams. But what about the second state? The medium bandwidth micro-idle cognition.
This happens when you are awake, but largely disengaged from active tasks.
Like zoning out.
Exactly. You're waiting in line at the grocery store, staring blankly at the chewing gum display, or you're zoned out on a long bus ride. During these micro-idle periods, spontaneous predictive rehearsal occurs.
So it's still simulating, just quieter?
Yes. Because you're awake, the brain doesn't have the wild generative freedom of a dream, so the simulations are more grounded. It quietly mirrors real-world environments, tweaking variables, testing out slight variations of the spatial layout right in front of you.
So dreams and zoning out make sense. We're relaxed, the brain has time to play and build these templates, but my brain doesn't always feel relaxed. What happens when I'm stressed out or on high alert? Does the simulation engine just shut down?
Not at all. That is exactly where the third engine kicks in. And this is perhaps the most profound paradigm shift in the entire paper.
Okay, I'm ready.
The third source of these simulations is one we almost universally mistake for a psychological problem. Intrusive thoughts.
The intrusive thought paradigm shift. The paper categorizes this as the low bandwidth engine. And you're right, society usually frames intrusive thoughts as unwanted, maladaptive noise.
Because they feel terrible.
They do. Everyone has them. You're chopping vegetables and suddenly imagine the knife slipping. Or you're driving over a bridge and your brain flashes a vivid image of you jerking the steering wheel into the guardrail. We usually think this just means we're incredibly anxious or neurotic.
Psychology has historically viewed them as misfires.
Yeah.
But SEMSI's architecture rebrands them entirely. They are not noise. They are high-priority predictive rehearsals.
Wait, rehearsals?
Yes. Think about the bandwidth comparison again. If a dream is a sprawling, chaotic, feature-length film, an intrusive thought is a one-second, highly targeted micro-simulation.
Because it's low bandwidth.
Right. It requires very low bandwidth because it focuses on a single, immediate contingency.
So when I suddenly imagine tripping and falling flat on my face right before I walk on stage to give a presentation, my brain isn't just torturing me to lower my self-esteem.
No, it isn't.
It's essentially running a high-stakes fire drill.
Precisely. Your brain's primary job is to minimize error and keep you alive. What better way to prepare the organism for survival than by rapidly simulating worst-case physical scenarios or high-stakes social failures?
That is wild.
Intrusive thoughts create incredibly fine-grained, highly specific predictive fragments. Your brain models the physics of the fall, the social reaction of the crowd, the escape routes from the stage. It stress tests the future.
But why do they have to be so terrified? Like, why can't my brain just run a low bandwidth simulation of me giving a great presentation and everyone clapping?
Well, because there's no survival threat in everyone clapping.
Right. Good point.
The predictive engine prioritizes threats. And this brings us to a crucial concept in the text that explains the different flavors of déjà vu. Affective salience.
Affective salience, meaning the emotional weight or like emotional charge attached to an experience.
Exactly. When your brain runs a high-stakes fire drill, like the steering wheel on the bridge, It doesn't just model the physics of the crash. It floods the simulation with the appropriate emotional weight.
To make you pay attention.
Right. It attaches anxiety, hyper-awareness, or dread to that specific spatial model to ensure you take the threat seriously.
Oh, wow. I think I see where this is going. We've all had deja vu that feels different, right?
Absolutely.
Sometimes it's just a mild, curious feeling of, huh, this room looks familiar. But other times, it hits you like a ton of bricks. Your heart rate spikes, the hair on your arms stands up, and the familiarity feels almost ominous.
And SEMSI's model perfectly explains why. If the pre-experience simulation that your brain is currently matching was originally generated during your last micro-idle daydream, the confidence signal will feel neutral.
Just a normal ding.
Right. But if the blueprint was originally forged during a terrifying intrusive thought, it carries that heavy affective salience.
That emotional baggage.
Yes. When you later encounter a real-world situation that geometrically matches that fire drill template, you don't just get the ding of recognition. You get a ghost echo of that original terror. The emotional weight detaches from the specific danger and bleeds into the present moment.
That is mind-blowing. It completely removes the stigma from intrusive thoughts. They aren't a sign of mental fragility. They are your brain's security system working overtime to map out escape routes.
It's a much healthier way to view them.
Okay, so now we have the complete picture of where these blueprints come from. The high bandwidth dreams, the medium bandwidth idle resting, and the low bandwidth intrusive fire drills.
The three engines of simulation.
Right. But we still need to understand how the glitch actually happens. Walk me through the mechanics of the collision. What happens in my brain the moment I actually enter that unfamiliar coffee shop?
Let's trace the sequence. We start with the predictive system, which, as we established, is constantly pushing its internal models outward, anticipating the very next sensory input.
Okay, so I open the door to the coffee shop. My eyes take in the angles of the tables, the shadows on the floor, the sequence of the barista turning around.
And all of that raw sensory data rushes in to meet the brain's prediction. Instantly, the predictive system searches its vast repertoire of pre-experience simulations.
It's flipping through the files.
It scans the millions of templates it built during your dreams and idle moments. And it finds a match. The geometry of the coffee shop perfectly aligns with that blueprint your brain built out of the submarine hallway from your dream last month.
The spatial layout matches.
Spatial layout matches. The temporal sequence matches.
And because there is a high confidence match, the system fires off that familiarity signal. The localized biochemical reward. Ding, I know this place.
It fires the signal. But here is the critical complication. You get the visceral sensation of familiarity. Your conscious mind feels the alarm ringing.
Right, I feel it in my gut.
So naturally, your conscious mind turns around and tries to look for the memory file to explain why the alarm is ringing.
Right. So what does this all mean? If I have this blueprint from a dream and it matches reality perfectly, why don't I just say, oh, right, I jumped about this geometric layout last Tuesday. Why does it feel so mysterious and unplaceable?
Because of how the brain stores these blueprints. This is the absolute core aha moment of the theory, resolving the central puzzle of familiarity without recollection.
I'm ready.
These pre-experience simulations are never encoded as episodic memories.
Wait, episodic memory. Let me make sure I have this. Think of episodic memory like a documentary film of your life, right? It has a timestamp, a specific location, a cast of characters.
Yes.
So my 10th birthday party or my high school graduation, those are documentary films stored in my memory archive.
That is a perfect analogy. If episodic memory is the documentary film, the predictive simulations are just the Hollywood sets.
The Hollywood sets?
Yes. They are the blank sound stages, the generic living rooms, the fake brick walls.
Mm-hmm.
The brain builds these sets during dreams and intrusive thoughts to test out the action.
Oh, I see.
But once the simulation is over, it would be incredibly inefficient and honestly dangerously confusing to record every single daydream and intrusive thought as an actual historical event.
Oh, because you would constantly confuse your daydreams with reality.
Exactly. So the brain keeps the structural design of the Hollywood sets, but it throws away the documentary tape.
The text notes that these simulations share representational substrates with memory, which just means they use the same neural building blocks to represent space and objects, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
But they lack any temporal or contextual metadata. There is no timestamp. There is no narrative tag.
So there is literally no episodic trace to recall. When the familiarity alarm rings in the coffee shop and my conscious mind goes to the archive to find the documentary film explaining why I know this place, the archive is completely empty.
It is entirely empty. You get the loud, undeniable signal of recognition, but it is completely free of context.
Because the event never happened to me in the past, it was merely simulated for the future.
Yes. And because your conscious mind cannot find a past memory to attach the feeling to, it essentially short circuits.
It creates the ultimate paradox. I know this, but I don't know why.
Precisely.
Man, that gives me chills. The precise, sudden, context-free sense of having already experienced a moment isn't a failure of your memory trying to find something that isn't there. It's the absolute success of your predictive engine matching a spatial template, isolated completely from any narrative history.
And that elegantly unites all these completely disparate phenomena. It reveals that familiarity, prediction, dreams, and intrusive thoughts are not isolated psychological quirks.
They're all connected.
They're all just different expressions of a single, unified anticipatory system, a system designed from the ground up to construct your experience before it even occurs.
Pulling back from the micromechanics of all this, it just makes you realize how unbelievably hard the brain is working behind the scenes without us ever asking it to.
It's exhausting just thinking about it.
Yeah. This unified theory doesn't just solve a neat psychological parlor trick about why restaurants feel familiar. It reframes our entire relationship with our own consciousness.
It truly does. To synthesize what Semsi's model shows us, deja vu is not a malfunction. It is a brilliant, natural byproduct of our predictive memory system.
A feature, not a bug.
Exactly. Our brains are relentless, generative engines. The bizarre simulations they run while we sleep, the idle templates they build while we stare at a magazine rack, the rapid-fire intrusive thoughts that stress test our worst fears, they're all collaborating.
They're building a massive, invisible architecture of anticipation.
Yes, to ensure that when reality does hit, we are never truly caught off guard.
And I think that is the biggest takeaway for you listening to this deep dive right now. The next time you're walking down the street or sitting in a meeting and that strange, dizzying wave of deja vu washes over you, don't feel weirded out.
No need to panic.
Right. Don't assume your brain is breaking down or misfiring. Recognize it for what it actually is. It is a fleeting conscious glimpse into the massive invisible machinery running just beneath the surface of your mind.
It is proof that your brain is keeping you one step ahead of the present moment.
Exactly. And the next time you have a random, terrifying, intrusive thought while waiting for your coffee, don't judge yourself for it. Don't think it makes you a bad or anxious person.
It's just your brain doing its job.
Just let the simulation run, know that it's just a fire drill, and let it go.
It is a profoundly empowering way to view our own cognition. We aren't just reacting to the world, we are constantly constructing the future.
We really are. But, fully accepting this model does leave you with something pretty wild to chew on.
Oh, what's that?
Well, if our brains are so unbelievably good at constructing our reality before it even happens, projecting these sets outward and just waiting for the sensory data to confirm them, how much of what you are seeing and feeling right now is the actual objective world? And how much is just your brain's prediction coming true?